MX, Pence would have declared the former president the winner with more electoral college votes at 232 votes to 222. Eastman predicted that action would receive howls, of course, from the Democrats. Yes, in fact, it reminds me of Allen Ginsberg's howl. I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness and some douchebag named John Eastman. Now, per the plan, Pence would then say that no candidate had reached 270 votes in the Electoral College and throw the election to the House of Representatives, where a majority would vote for the former president to win the election, because at the time, Republicans controlled 26 of the state delegations. The bare majority needed to win that vote. That's not winning an election. That's grabbing power by a pussy. But when you're a Republican, they let you do it. The conspirators were confident in the plan, with one caveat. The main thing here is that Pence should do this without asking for permission, either from a vote of the joint session or from the court. Now, luckily, Mike Pence can't do anything without asking permission. Mother, I know this is controversial, but may I please put ice in my water? I understand there's a chance it will make my tummy pregnant. Here's the disturbing detail. The night before the riot, the former president opened a door near the Resolute desk so he could hear his people. He left the door open, the muffled soundtrack of excited screams and yells from his supporters filling the room. That is some serious dictator energy. But listening to a fascist mob is the only way that guy can fall asleep. In fact, on his nightstand, he has a white power noise machine. Heil slumber. Today, sure. Why not? Everybody loves a good night's sleep. Now, today, Woodward and Costa appeared on Coffee Joe Morning and the Morning Brew Crew, and Woodward said this about that moment.
It reminded me of Nixon talking to the pictures of former presidents on the wall at a moment as Watergate was cracking open and cracking his presidency. And the equivalent is that Trump isn't talking to George Washington or Abraham Lincoln like Nixon was. He's talking to this mob.
And is this true? I'm being told we've just received a statement from the ghost of Richard Nixon. Hey, Bob, I made you famous. How are you going to do me like that? I'm nothing like that guy. I created the EPA, and this is my real hair. In summation, luckily, wow, the ghost of Richard Nixon. Luckily, the former president's legal team did not count on one thing: some Republicans caring if the United States continues. Like Utah Senator Mike Lee, who said of plans to try and overturn the results in individual states, you might as well make your case to Queen Elizabeth II. Okay, let's ask her. Your Majesty, can they present their case to you?
No one wants to hear it.
This is from yesterday. This is on the So Brazen It's Hard to Believe These Words Were Spoken list. Trump's former economic advisor, a party clown named Larry Kudlow. I'm not sure if this is technically considered to be gaslighting, or if maybe there's just a gas leak at his house.
With an extremely divisive Biden, I will tell you, folks, I kind of yearn for the calm, peaceful, orderly, prosperous, America first, around the globe days of Donald Trump. Just saying.
Right. Who can forget those peaceful, prosperous, orderly, and calm days? Genghis Khan, we used to call him. That's how calm it was when Donald Trump was. I think the memory is the first to go. We are learning details about the calm, peaceful, orderly, prosperous days of Donald Trump in a new book by Bob Woodward and Robert Costa of The Washington Post. The book's called Peril. It came out today. It lays out what went down at the White House in the aftermath of the insurrection January 6th. There were some bombshell allegations, including a memo that was outlined by one of Trump's lawyers, John Eastman. So the book says this guy Eastman drew up a six-step plan explaining how Mike Pence should overturn the results of the election. And the steps went like this. Step one, Vice President Pence, presiding over the joint session, opens and begins counting the ballots, starting with Alabama. Step two, When he gets to Arizona, he pretends to have a coughing fit and reaches for a glass of water. Step three, while reaching for the glass, Pence knocks the ballots onto the floor, saying the words whoopsie daisy loudly so everyone can hear. Step four, as Pence is picking up the ballots, he shouts, hey, what's that over there? Then kicks the ballots from seven key battleground states under the podium. Step five, he asks everyone to check under their chairs for the ballots. And while they're distracted, looking under their chairs, he swallows. He eats all the ballots. Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, all in his stomach. Now, at this point, no one can find the ballots. So Pence explains he has no choice but to declare Trump the winner. And then step six, bangs the gavel, hops aboard Space Force One, and is never seen again. And that's... And for some reason, he refused to go along with this plan. The real memo suggested that Pence used the element of surprise. They wanted him to just show up and, without warning, overturn the results of the election, at which, I don't know, without asking permission, that seems impossible for Mike Pence. I mean, look, Mike Pence is a guy who asks if it's okay to go to the bathroom when he's alone, okay? He doesn't do things like that. This guy, Eastman, came up with a hell of an opinion, too. He said, the fact is that the Constitution assigns this power to the vice president as the ultimate arbiter. He's basically arguing that the third base umpire can declare himself the winner of the World Series.
No! Here's what we've learned just this week about the scope of Donald Trump's efforts to cling to power. The reporting yesterday in the New York Times that the Trump campaign knew their conspiracy theories about voting machines were totally baseless before Trump's attorneys began a campaign to spread them all over the country. A memo detailing a detailed strategy to allow Pence to overturn the lawful results of the 2020 election. And a letter from the disgraced ex-president to Georgia's Secretary of State sent last Friday, mounting brand new efforts to intervene in the state's 2020 vote count. It is, again, September of 2021.
No! There is just going to be more that drips out about the extent to which Donald Trump and those working for him tried to subvert and overturn the election. And when people want to talk about what can be done to hold Trump accountable, then we have to start looking at what occurred from the election all the way through January 6th, not just January 6th itself. And when we're learning now that the campaign was aware of that the claims were bogus, that there was an extensive six-point plan by a lawyer to try to convince Mike Pence to overturn the election, and obviously a lot of the revelations in the Woodward and Costa book, it's just more and more evidence that I believe that the Department of Justice needs to investigate now. That January 6th investigation is really focused on the events of January 6th, but the Department of Justice needs to have a separate and overlapping investigation into the Trump White House's efforts to conspire to violate federal laws and to intervene and interrupt and obstruct the lawful election.
There clearly are people in America who believe in establishing euthanasia.
Government program that determines you're going to pull the plug on grandma.
There's a lot of demons around here, apparently.
Very fine people on both sides. A total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
This election was a fraud. It was a rigged election.
60 million Americans think it was stolen.
You'll never take back our country with weakness.
A plan is now underway to use vaccine mandates to take your guns.
I hope that people will not comply by any means necessary. They shouldn't get the shot.
Well, it's one thing to be for limited government. It's one thing to be, as the founders were, for a government of limited, delegated, and enumerated powers. This, however, is beyond political philosophy. This is clinical psychology we have to consult. That clip you just showed is paralyzing with its sheer insanity. I don't know how you reach people like that, Ari. I just don't. Something has happened to a small group of Americans who define their happiness as the unhappiness of everybody else. They're addicted to furiousness. I actually think dopamine is released in the brain when they get angry. They're only happy when unhappy. And I don't know what you do with them besides quarantine them. Try and get on with politics without them because they're not coming back.
Thanks for the songs this week from Husker Du, Jim Carroll Band, and the Tape Beatles. And thanks for the clips and excerpts from Phil Valentine, Howard Stern, Trevor Noah, Seth Meyers, Tucker Carlson, Madison Cawthorn, Stephen Colbert, Bob Woodward, The Ghost of Richard Nixon, Jimmy Kimmel, Larry Kudlow, Nicole Wallace, Newt Gingrich, Donald Trump, and George Will.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
For some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Today we are joined again by Alexis Figuero, a leader in the Black Lives Matter movement in Saratoga, and his mother, Nedra Hickenbottom, who has been speaking out in support of her children's activism. Welcome both to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Lexis, we last had you on when the assistant police chief, John Cotone, made some inflammatory comments. And since then, things have escalated. I've talked to Jamaica Miles after she was arrested, and you, along with about a dozen other activists, have been arrested in connection with a protest that happened back in July. You were going to class, I believe, and you were pulled over. Tell me what happened with you, and tell me a little bit briefly what's been happening in Saratoga Springs with Black Lives Matter activists.
Last time I was on air was about Cotone's statements. Now we see Cotone's actions, his words going into action. You see the police sitting here trying to intimidate us, trying to silence us. When I was pulled over by two sheriff deputies in two different cars for a routine traffic stop. That's not routine whatsoever. You don't get pulled over by two cop cars in a car by yourself. You know, I'm on my way to class. turns into getting a ticket for a tree being in my mirror, the air freshener, like a small one. That's what I got a ticket for. Then they come with a warrant that they know nothing about. This is crazy. And, you know, we're seeing this all over the Capital Region. We're seeing this in Albany. We're seeing this in Schenectady. We're seeing this now in Saratoga right now. And what it is a organized attack to silence all of us, to not have the story out about Daryl Mount as well. My mother and my children was there the day that I got arrested. She followed me in their car after we just had a nice day at Saratoga Apple together as a family. I get to go to my first class in UAlbany for public criminology to try to make changes throughout the system in all different ways besides protesting, because there's much more than that, and we know that. So while I'm trying to better my life and do better for others, I'm getting pulled over and being harassed by police, and I'm being detained for 8 hours, 9 hours. Like I said, the mother of my children ends up there. She ends up getting slammed up by police officers, bruised ribs, bruises all over her arms, contusions in front of my children. A two-year-old, she just turned two today, and a six-year-old boy. You know, this is their first experience of really being that close to police. And what is this going to tell them?
And just to clarify, Lexis, you were arrested weeks, 6 weeks after the protest that you are being charged with. Disorderly conduct, which is just a violation, and unlawful imprisonment, which is for supposedly blocking a car with a person who is trying to get home. But that protest was back in July 14th, I believe. And you were arrested, what, how far after?
7 weeks after. And actually, I didn't get the imprisonment charge. You know, go figure. Then they added on some charges that same day while they had me in the cell, holding me in a 6x8 cell for 8 hours, 9 hours. For once again, like you said, a violation, like a traffic ticket. I think it's a $125 fine. And then they added on two more charges from two city council meetings where I exposed different things, said things that people didn't like. Now I'm getting charged for that for obstruction of governmental administration. So altogether, I'm facing 10 charges when it comes down from, you know, Saratoga to Albany.
I spoke with Melanie Trimble of the NYCLU, and obviously they have come out strongly in support of the activists and calling the Saratoga Springs Police Department a racist organization. So I wonder how you, as an activist with all these charges, respond to these what appear to be intimidation tactics from the Saratoga Springs Police Department. Are you able to continue your community work at this time?
And we're not going to stop our community work. That's what they want us to do. You know, that's the whole motive of everything. For them to so-called change the narrative, like Catone said, and Robin Dalton. Let's not forget that Robin Dalton, who's running for mayor right now, was a part of all this as well. She's a public safety commissioner. She's supposed to be the liaison between the people and the police. She's not doing a good job at all, clearly. But we're going to continue doing what we're doing. We have an event actually this Sunday, 3 p.m., called Cookies Not Cops, and it's going to be a fundraiser, mutual aid fundraiser for the activists and different people who've been arrested. We also have food there for free. Once you get mutual aid, you don't have to pay for things. You just give a donation if you want to give a donation, and that's it. I have some live music as well. That'll be in Congress Park at 3 p.m. We got a Rock the Vote event that we're planning right now. We're going to have live music. We're going to get people out there to go vote. You know, we're going to continue doing what we're doing. We're going to keep pressing for Daryl Mount's investigation. We're never going to stop that. So, yeah, I mean, they can try to tire us out. That's what they want us to do. Keep our eyes off of the real thing that we're doing to make change and keep our eyes on the courts and this and that. We're going to have our eyes on everything. You know, it's going to be a lot of work, but we're going to keep going.
Now, Lexis, we are also joined today here for the first time by your mother, Nedra Hickenbottom. Nedra, welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine as well. And you spoke out in the city council meeting in Saratoga Springs in support of your children. And I just wanted to hear from you what drives you to speak out at this time in support of your children and their activism.
Yes, thank you for having me. Yes, I try to stay out of their limelight and what was going on with them. But once this arrest occurred, I felt that I need to speak out because they arrested both of my children. And it was for nonsense, really. And I know that they're trying to stop them from doing what they're doing. So I felt this was my time to speak up and speak out.
What can you tell us about Lexis and some of the media coverage that has come out?
this past week, the Daily Gazette came out with an article. It was mentioned there that he was an alumnus of the state juvenile detention system. He was not an alumnus of the system. He was put into the system through a PINS petition, and it was due to truancy. So that is just not going to school. So they tried to make it like it was some kind of criminal act that he's an alumnus of that system, but he was not in that system because of being a criminal. It was due to school. And so because of that, they put a PINS petition on him. When they do that, they put them into a system, a juvenile detention center. That is not the way to go, because now you're locking him up with criminals. And the detention center is so they can send them off to a specialized school for education. But meanwhile, you can be stuck there for over a year, 2 years, and there's nothing that you can do because they're stuck in that system. So it's basically the education to jail pipeline.
Thank you for explaining that. So on Tuesday's city council meeting, many people spoke in support of the Black Lives Matter activists, including Samira Sagari. And as part of her statement, the Saratoga Springs activists demand that all charges be dropped before mediation is pursued. Lexis, could you explain this to me?
It's clear as day that these charges are all trumped up charges. So we've seen this around the whole country. We also see the bans on abortions. We see bans on people's voter rights. You know, they're bringing back Jim Crow. Jim Crow is very alive and prevalent in 2021, and it's sad. We're not going to fall for it, and we're definitely not going to sit here and have a $35,000 mediation with the city, especially people who are running the police, while they have an open investigation on us. There's actually an open investigation now.
So in terms of, you know, these open investigation, these court days, there's about a dozen activists who have charges now against them. And could you just give us a brief update on the other activists and when the next court date will be?
Gabrielle Elliott's court date will be on the 21st of October at 9 a.m., as well as a bunch of other activists, I think including Molly Dunn. So a bunch of the activists have their court dates again. There may be ACOD as a deal, maybe a plea deal.
They can't get arrested in a set period of time, like 6 months, a year. And if they do not get arrested in that amount of time, then their charges will be dropped. So it's sort of like a way to discourage them from staying active and being on the streets because they're scared that they'll get more charges, right? Is that why you call it a plea deal?
It is, for sure. Yeah. Or maybe you were just happen to be marching at a peaceful protest and they get you 2 months later.
To both of you, I put this last question. If there's anything you didn't get to say that you want to be included in this interview, now is your time.
Well, I'm going to say that we need people to continue to make these phone calls, emails, sending mail, actual mail, postal, to get the message out to the AGA's office, to get the message out to the DA's offices in Albany, in Schenectady, and Saratoga. We need people's support for sure. The community has been rallying behind this. We've been out here for 15 months now, so we just need the continued support, and we thank everybody that supports us.
Excellent. Nedra, was there anything that you wanted to add?
This cannot continue. People need to go out and vote, watch and look and think about who they're voting for before they go out and vote. We have people that have retired and living off of pensions now, taxpayer money that are part of the Daryl Mount killing. And there are others that are still within the police force. So if they're in the police force, we can only imagine those same people are getting paid again by taxpayer money and what they could do to people like my son or my daughter. You know, we need to really watch this and watch carefully. And if something occurs with one of the activists, we all need to think and point fingers, and we know where to point fingers to.
I just wanted to say one more last thing, which was the fact that, as she stated, you know, they're infringing on our First Amendment rights. And let this also be stated that, you know, there was no investigation to the death of Daryl Mount. but they did more than a two-month investigation still ongoing into a peaceful protest where we're exercising our rights for Justice Fidel Mount. And also let it be said that those warrants were signed on the date of August 31st, the same day that we had a silent vigil and the anniversary of the beating of Daryl Mount. Isn't that a coincidence?
Nedra Hickambottom and her son, Lexis Figueroa, thank you both for joining us today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you, as always.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The Wyndham Farmers Market is held every Saturday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. in front of Wyndham Local at 5410 Route 23 in Wyndham. You can find out all kinds of information about the Wyndham Farmers Market on the WGXC community calendar at wgxc.org, where all sorts of local events are listed. And you can even list your own if you go to wgxc.org and click on Add an Event. You'll be read on the radio, just like the Wyndham Farmers Market, which is held every Saturday through October 9th in front of Wyndham Local with meats, greens, honey, vegetables, and more. That's the Wyndham Farmers Market from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. every Saturday on Route 23 in Wyndham. Spike Jones with Flight of the Bumblebee. And here is The Great Big Saul Came Nearer and Nearer.
Now he was a sawmill proprietor, and she a fair maid yet unkissed. One evening he winked his glass eye at her, but she said, "Nay, nay, sir, desist." So he dragged her into the sawmill, poor wench. Then he took off his belt and strapped her to the bench. And the great big saw came nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer. "Be my wife or you will be cut in two," said the villain to poor little Mira. But she said, "Nay, nay, though you cut me in twain, the angels will stick me together again." And the great big saw came nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer. Thank you. The villainous sawmill proprietor stood there with a sinister sneer. He should have done something to quiet her, for outside her sweetheart drew near. Oh, someone please save me, was poor Vera's cry, and our hero rushed in with a gleam in his eye, and the great big saw came nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer. Be my wife, or you will be cut in two, said the villain.
Hi, this is Corey Sear from the group Revealer. We're hanging out with WGXC 90.7 FM Accra.
Monday, September 27th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, including at 10 a.m., the Afrosonic Taxi takes off with tracks from Baba Salah, Antaga Zimba, and Guli Manku. And then at noon on the Deep 3 show, the artists Mary Halverson, Hilary Hahn, and Linda Lee are among the featured there. 2 p.m., there's brand new music from around the world, including this week from Muslim Gauze, Juan Jose Calarco, and Steve Rodin. At 4 p.m., we head to Housatonic in Western Massachusetts, where Kieran Riley hosts the WGXC afternoon show from. And at 6 p.m., we've got interviews with both candidates running for Rensselaer County Clerk in the election this fall, Frank J. Marola, the incumbent, and Justin Foster, the insurgent. At 10 p.m., Crank Sturgeon is the featured artist with the Watt from Pedro Show, talking to Mike Watt from the Minutemen and Iggy Pop on the radio at WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street. You belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of AJ of Whitestone, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to Transmission Arts Programming, WGXC, 90.7 FM. Grabbable, handleable, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Haitians fleeing unacceptable misery, greeted by whips and shackles at U.S. border. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. The images of U.S. Border Patrol agents on horseback whipping Haitian asylum seekers as they wade across the Rio Grande River into Texas shocked the world this week. After as many as 15,000 refugees arrived, sheltering under a bridge in Del Rio, Texas, President Biden responded with an aggressive deportation campaign. His administration invoked President Donald Trump's anti-immigrant Title 42 public health deportation policy to send plane loads of people back to Haiti, despite political turmoil there following the July assassination of President Jovenel Moïse and a devastating earthquake last month.
What the hell are we doing here?
That's Democratic California Congressmember Maxine Waters at a news conference in Washington, D.C. Tuesday, surrounded by members of the Congressional Black Caucus.
What we witness takes us back hundreds of years. What we witnessed was worse than what we witnessed in slavery. Cowboys with their reins again whipping black people, Haitians, into the water where they're scrambling and falling down when all they're trying to do is escape from violence in their country.
Congressmember Waters was not alone in her criticism. On Wednesday morning, U.S. Special Envoy for Haiti, Daniel Foote, resigned his post in a letter obtained by PBS. Foote wrote, "I will not be associated with the United States' inhumane, counterproductive decision to deport thousands of Haitian refugees and illegal immigrants to Haiti, a country where American officials are confined to secure compounds because of the danger posed by armed gangs and control of daily life," Foote wrote. He added, "Our policy approach to Haiti remains deeply flawed, and my recommendations have been ignored and dismissed." Foote's scathing letter continued, "The people of Haiti, mired in poverty, hostage to the terror, kidnappings, robberies, and massacres of armed gangs, and suffering under a corrupt government with gang alliances, simply cannot support the forced infusion of thousands of return migrants lacking food, shelter, and money without additional avoidable human tragedy. The collapsed state is unable to provide security or basic services, and more refugees will fuel further desperation and crime. Surging migration to our borders will only grow as we add to Haiti's unacceptable misery," the resigned envoy wrote. Reports also surfaced of Haitian migrants who had been shackled at their waist and feet by their U.S. captors, and that the pace of deportation flights was increasing to as many as 7 per day. Christopher Columbus made landfall on the island he named Hispaniola in 1492, and on behalf of Spain, subjected the native Taino population to a brutal genocide while extracting as much wealth as possible. Spain imported enslaved African people to replace the indigenous people they killed. In 1697, France took control of the western half of the island, forming what would become Haiti, while the Spanish colony, known as Santo Domingo, later to become the Dominican Republic, remained on the eastern half. The violence and oppression continued while Haiti became France's most profitable colony, with an estimated 85% of Haiti's population enslaved. Torture, whippings, and murder were used as regular instruments of control. Revolutions outside the country did not go unnoticed to the Haitians, with the successful rebellion against the British and the 13 colonies to form the United States, followed soon after by the French Revolution in 1789. In fact, Haitians actually fought in the American Revolution. Britain occupied Savannah, Georgia during the Revolutionary War, and in 1779, George Washington's rebel Continental Army laid siege to the city. France sent ships and troops to help, among them between 500 to 900 soldiers of color recruited from Haiti. The Chasseurs Volontaires de Saint-Domingue, as they were called, were mainly Haitian freedmen of African descent. They suffered significant casualties. A monument to these Haitian soldiers was unveiled in Savannah in 2007. Enslaved Haitians rose up against their French oppressors in 1791, and fighting against what was then considered the greatest military on the planet under Napoleon, emerged victorious, founding Haiti as the first Black Republic in 1804. The United States refused to recognize the new nation of Haiti, afraid that the successful slave uprising would inspire similar revolts in the United States. In 1825, Haiti was forced to pay France reparations, which hobbled the Haitian economy for well over a century. Since the 1950s, dictatorships, coups d'états, assassinations, political meddling, and occupation by the United States in a series of earthquakes, hurricanes, and drought have left Haiti the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere. Given the scale and duration of Haiti's suffering, it's surprising that only 15,000 refugees have gathered under the bridge in Del Rio, Texas. The Biden administration has a chance to change direction, to put away the whips and shackles that Haitians have endured for over 500 years, and live up to the promise to the poor, huddled masses enshrined in that towering beacon, a gift from France, the Statue of Liberty. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes? Tomorrow,
I'll take a look at swine flu up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
And now here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, patchy fog before 9 a.m. Otherwise, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 72 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 53 degrees. And on Sunday, mostly sunny with a temperature high near 69 degrees. And Sunday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 51. And that is your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
One speeding ticket, Columbia County.
Columbia County, everybody gets speeding tickets. How else do they pay for the roads to get plowed in the winter?
New York State's fall foliage report is out now, and it's the first week in autumn in the Catskills, and they report that foliage spotters in Delhi and Delaware County are calling for a 40% leaf transition this weekend, with muted yellow leaves on the hillsides and some brilliant pops of red maple leaves in wet areas. Foliage spotters in Roxbury are also predicting 40% foliage change with increasing amounts of brilliant orange leaves along with some flashes of red. To the east, spotters reporting from above 1,500 feet in Greene County are expecting 30% color change this weekend, with average burgundy, red, and orange leaves continuing to emerge over the predominantly green backdrop. Foliage change around the town of Windham is expected to be 15% with mostly muted red leaves along with some orange. Rensselaer County spotters predict 10 to 15% leaf change with mostly green leaves, but some deep red and light yellow leaves above average brilliance are appearing in higher elevations. Albany County spotters at Cohoes Falls in Cohoes predict a little less than 10% color change, with muted orange and red leaves and some yellow. Reports in Latham and Loudonville expect a little less than 10% color change by the weekend, with emerging rust brown, lemon, tangerine, and light green leaves of average brilliance. While in Columbia County, spotters in Hudson expect 10 to 20% foliage change, with average shades of yellow and orange appearing. Fall colors are emerging in Dutchess County, according to Poughkeepsie spotters, where 10% leaf change is expected, highlighted by bright touches of orange. This has been This Week in Autumn Leaves. Watch out on the trees and on the ground this weekend.
What else do DJs get? I mean, we're just voices in the air, but we're what makes radio live. And what do we get for it? Seems like every year you pack everything up, move to another town. Gets harder and harder to find a station that'll let you program music you want to play. You're 40 and there's some kid half your age who will take your job and do it for half the money, and then you find yourself making silly demands. Free coffee. But that's my little moment of honesty, so we can get back to the nonsense.
The Hudson Common Council voted September 21st to pass a good cause eviction law. The law is similar to one passed recently in Albany, and would require landlords to provide a detailed reason to a judge when evicting a tenant. The law passed with 8 common council members voting in favor and 3rd Ward alderperson Shirzaz Nizan abstaining.
Okay, can I have a motion to approve the proposed local law?
I'll make that motion, Rebecca.
And a second.
Make that second.
Tracy, a roll call vote, please.
Alderman Garriga.
Aye.
Moranti.
Is this a sub-other desk? Is that what this is to do? For a time frame? Is that what this is
no,
about?
No, this has been on our desk. This is
okay. Aye.
Nizan.
I'm abstaining.
Rosenthal.
Aye.
Sarr.
Aye. My bad. I was in mute.
Walker?
Aye.
Wallace?
Aye.
Wolf?
Aye.
Present DiPietro?
Aye. I believe it passes, Tracy?
Yes, it was approved.
Okay.
Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson previously spoke in favor of the law, saying it is needed as rising rents are forcing locals from their homes. Quote, "This is something that advocates have been talking about for years," unquote, Johnson said. Quote, "We've seen our school district have to consolidate. We've seen our hospital no longer work for birthing services, losing jobs," unquote. Besides making evictions subject to a judge's oversight, the law also gives tenants a right to renew their lease and protects them from an annual rent increase of more than 5%.
Thank you.